We have an upload in progress, I'm quite excited to say. I will speak more slowly so it can finish. There you are. Okay, thank you very much for your patience, everyone. We wanted to have the technical difficulties resolved before we started instead of during the discussion. We are on our final formal piece of the afternoon, which deals with the readability and linkification of a domain name. I believe it's entitled, How Do People and Computers Detect a Domain Name? And this is not that we're going to sit down and show you the answer that we've resolved over the last couple of hours, but that it's a topic that really should have some good discourse, because how does Microsoft Word or any other word processing program determine, did you forget to hit space after the period in your sentence, or are you designating yourself an identifier for the use on the internet? I mean, this is a simple topic with very, very hard to resolve. So at any rate, I will give it back to Dennis again to lead for us. Thank you much.
Thank you, Rich. And I thank my colleagues, Richard and Mark, to help me along the way, too. All right. So how do people and computers detect a domain name? So in short, linkification, right? That's a very topic of that Universal Acceptance Steering Group. It's going to focus in the following time. So we want to officially kick off this linkification work stream and in order to gain a better understanding how, what's the extent of this problem from a people and computer levels. But at the end, we have to decide where we are going to focus on. Who's controlling? Don't want to... Okay, me. Okay, so I'm going crazy on the slides. All right. All right, so just as a way of background, right, early conventions, we're talking about, 30 years ago, right, when the internet started. So people, right, they used to see a www or HTTP in front of a domain name, and that would signal them to, oh, this is a website. And pretty much the same for computers. And here, like, they use, HTTP or www, and the string that will follow will be hyperlinked, right? And it will make it a hyperlink that will go to actual domain name. Now, today, 30 years later, you don't necessarily have to have the www or the prefix HTTP in order to understand it's a domain name. Most likely, this is going to be where the domain name is using a well-known TLD, as ComNet or the ccTLD. And as far as computers, well, the user experience varies across applications and also character sets. And we have a few examples to show how different that is. So, for example, user-generated content, and like in a social media application, right, they don't know about these prefixes other than www, but not every single website uses a www for domain names. Especially now in the new UTLDs, www is going away. We also have to keep in mind the internationalization of it. We have the ideography full stop. That's in the CJK character set of the Chinese, Japanese, they don't typically use the close dot as what refer it as the close dot and an open dot. So they would use an open dot for the full stop. So how do we deal with that? And today, internet browsers, the major internet browsers, pretty much deal with it. They map it to map the open dot to the close dot so that they treat it as a domain name. And the user doesn't have to do anything. We also have to think about what are the BIDI considerations in order to tackle this problem. And these are in this table, and unfortunately it's maybe not clear on the screen, so I'm gonna try to read it for you. Let me see if I can increase better. Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. Right? 90%. There you go. Okay. So from a computer standpoint, this is just a taste of what application A and application B do in terms of linkification. For example, if I use this domain name, example.com, no prefix, the expected output could be the same string, because I'm not putting anything as a prefix, either www or HTTP. So the application, okay, I don't know what, whether this is a typo or are you trying to, or you intend this is to be a main name, so I don't know. So application A and application B, I mean, these are real applications, but I didn't use the names of the application. There was no change. So I think the expected output for this application was, okay, so I don't know what you're intending to put here, so I'm just doing nothing. A second use case is using the prefix www. And of course, you would expect that it turns out to a hyperlink to a website, so http://www.example.com. And as expected, application A and application B linkified those domains. Same thing for an example of home.example.com using HTTP as a prefix. And so what is interesting though here on the example with an IDN, www.tanaka.com, so the expected behavior should be, because I'm using the www prefix, then I should expect that to be converted to a link. That happened with application A, but didn't happen on application B. So definitely there was a different way of processing that string in the application, in the backend of the application, so that it one mapped it to a hyperlink and the other one didn't. The same thing happened with the HTTP example, and this time I'm using the open dot or the middle dot. So the expected behavior would be to linkify that string, and it did happen on application A, didn't happen on application B. And the same thing, we expect that to happen with the prefix mail too for email addresses. So these are the type of test cases that we are going to have to do for several applications in different settings in order to understand what's the behavior and what should be the desired behavior. And so this work stream will come up with good practices guidelines in order to tackle that. So again, what's the desired outcome? First, we need to decide what's in the scope, what's not. We talk about how people detect links, how do computers detect links. So I'm suggesting that computer behavior is in a scope. We want to produce best practices for application providers to define when they should linkify strings and where they should not. But as far as people behavior, suggesting this is out of scope, but maybe a community outreach report. So that, I think that's an open question for the group to consider.
When you say people behavior, could you explain that a little bit? Maybe, I think it's late in the day for me. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Absolutely. I'm sure you are not the only one. So people behavior is, so how do people detect education?
Okay.
So, and I think this group is not, the charter is not about education.
I had to, as I was listening to Dennis and watching the slides, I looked up and I noticed that we've essentially made a statement through our logo on what we think people behavior ought to be about. It's something between some level of protocol, because I'm sure the forward slashes were put there because it implies the protocol that would be coming before, and it doesn't matter. It almost could have been */, you know, in a sense, which I'm glad it's not, because this is better. But pardon? No, they are wild cards. So, but that being said, this is another example where there is a very solid intersection with efforts from other communities, such as the Domain Name Association, who is also looking to try to ensure that in general, what does an address look like in the wild on the side of a bus, if you will? What does it need to look like? Don?
So just raising, APTLD had a meeting in Oman last year, and this came up with respect to the Arabic domain names, that if you see an Arabic domain name on the side of a bus or a billboard, how do you know that as a person? And this, there was no answer came out of the meeting, but there was that, and quite relevant to the DNA, because one of the key drivers of that was Adrian Kindris. And he's saying, in the Arab, for the Arabic community, how do you tell the community this string is a domain name? There was no answer, but it was a leading question at the time. And I think, you know, that's Dennis is saying is, you know, is that bit in scope for the UA? And I think Dennis is suggesting it's not, but it would be good if it is in scope for the DNA, for example, that we work cooperatively, because our focus is on the software community. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. That's a fair characterization, Don. I just want to add, when I see linkification, if we approach the application layer, that's something that we can find a number of guidelines that we apply to all, right? A set of guidelines that applies to all. But in terms, when it comes to people, and we have thousands of or hundreds of new TLDs out there, there are not going to be a unique set of guidelines that we apply to all. It's more on the companies, the registry operator's best interest to advertise their TLDs and educate their end users or potential end users how to deal with those.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is Rich. I agree with you from the standpoint of if, you know, .tlda has a mechanism where they want to promote their new TLD and how it is used in one way or another, or if a company happens to have a .com or a .photography, a .whatever, they may use different font treatments, they may do different ways to emphasize their brand within that TLD. However, the lines for me get very blurry between people and computer, because you're talking about a person using a word processor to type something in that is going to have characters that are interpreted by the computer and then modified and presented back during that interaction with the human. And it's less about out in the wild seeing this, is it a domain name, but it's still an expected versus unexpected behavior, and consistency is important, I think.
I think this is Danny for the recording. So I see your point, right? The linkification has a user aspect of it because, yeah, we are the ones that input. So, yes, we'll have to take that into consideration from a user experience standpoint, but not from a domains in the wild standpoint.
Right, I agree. And it harkens back to me a little bit what Andrew was mentioning about the IETF. And I feel like there's a portion of what we're talking about here with the way the computers are going to be interpreting. And I don't think it comes to the element of the capital S should, where things should do things. But it seems like there is a way that if things all worked according to this RFC, we would end up with consistency.
So certainly not an RFC, right? Because this is really user interface. There are sort of three things that I would say. If you go back to the chart there that had all the various different examples on it, one of the things that I found very interesting was the suggestion that www.com, that should obviously be linkified. And that doesn't seem to me to be in any way an intuitive answer. My feeling is that something with a scheme name on the front, right? That's clearly a URI. Something that has a bunch of dots in it, I have no idea whether that's a URI. And it drives me, like, I write a lot of documentation, right? If you're working with Java stuff, for instance, you're always naming these class paths. I mean, they got all kinds of dots in them, and they're always immediately linkified, and it drives me out of my mind. And I can't turn it off. Or it's in, like, you know, it's buried 8 layers deep in the menu system somewhere. I still don't know how to turn it off. So those are things where it really actually depends a great deal on what the user is expecting. I think the same thing is true probably in the case of Arabript, or actually any right to left script examples. Like, what do you do under those circumstances, and what do you expect? What kind of separators are people actually typing in, and what do you expect? And a lot of this will be conditioned by what people are used to typing in browsers. And the problem, of course, is that decreasingly people type domain browsers. So it's hard to know what people's intuitions are going to be, because they don't have them yet. I think the best guidance that you can give for real developers, so the guidance, to go back to the earlier things about, like, what would you tell CIOs? Well, the CIO has to say, do you have an idea about how this, you know, do you have conventions and do you understand what they are? And then the developers need to have, like, a style book for, you know, what linkification works like and so on. And presumably that style guide over time in the industry is gradually going to tend to convert, right? But it seems to me that one of the things that would be really handy to do is work out what do users in these various kind of script communities expect to have happen with this. You could do that actually by studying user behavior or doing surveys or something like that. Because it really seems to me that, you know, there are going to be different answers depending on what the user community is and what they're used to having happen with string they input. Linkification probably for, you know, general purpose word processor, like, I don't know, something Jira or one of those kinds of projects, right, where you've got a lot of stuff in it that is software documentation and so on. It's not obvious that automatic linkification is a good idea in there. In fact, what you normally do. So that's an example where the conventions that are normal in a word processor are violated in that interface in the interest of giving you another kind of feature that is easily accessible to the user community that you're aiming at, and that user community is frequently software developers, so they've got a lot of stuff that have these dots. And I think laying out all of those different considerations would be super helpful, but I am not competent to do it. I'm not a user interface person.
Edmund here. So building on what Andrew just said, it seems like we kind of jumped into this in thinking that this should be universal, but it needs to be context based, and we probably need to set up those contexts or scenarios if we are ever, you know, if we're producing a document that says these are, you know, recommendations, then we need to create the context. You know, this is a scenario, and under this scenario, this should be linkified or not linkified. Maybe, you know, that part needs to be added, I guess.
But it's funny because I was thinking through as Andrew was speaking and getting to the point of Dennis's terms with, you know, like the person behavior versus the computer, and it's a bit of a broad statement to say person when you think about the different types of people that are the different locations. Even developers in different regions may need. So it's the biggest takeaway right now is that one size does not fit all, and we need to embrace that. Linkification is a multi-tiered problem to solve. Yes, please.
So one of the places this could be relevant is conferences which deal with language processing. And I'm not really sure how detailed you want to get into this, but this is something which can obviously be solved through rules, which is probably what industry is doing, or maybe this can be addressed through some more advanced machine learning algorithms. I guess one thing which problems like these always need to be addressed is test data. I think one of the things we can probably look into as well is that if we can use the relevant test data and make it available for the community, then we can do multiple things with it. So, for example, in the language processing community, sometimes what happens is that on particular problems, data is released and you call for a competition to have application developed, and you actually hold a workshop along with a regular conference, national conference, and have people come and present their algorithms and things. So that's something which even USC can probably sponsor as a workshop. But precursor to that kind of interest, developing that interest in a language community is actually to develop that test data set, which you'll eventually using to first train the systems and then obviously.
Thank you. First of all, I think that's a very kind of an interesting and an exciting suggestion on the workshop because of the level of engagement that it actually brings out as well, not just solving a problem. And Brent very timely was leaving because I was going to ask him a question. So another area where linkification is extremely important, I assume, would be in web crawlers and understanding the text of the internet and what is a reference to another one. And you have in your HTML, of course, you've got your arefs, your hrefs, excuse me, with your anchors and all. But there's also books that are scanned and other materials that are viewed for their context. And when you think is there processing goes on inside of your company where linkification in a completely different context is being done? Anything where data there might be at volume that we could leverage? No.
I don't know anything about the search search indexing process. I would imagine that there's some plain text leak detection going on there, but I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that. We definitely see it most visibly in documents and emails, and we were talking before about how important context is. And unfortunately, they're just blank spaces text, so they're not very context-specific at all. I don't know how that's handled in other areas like search indexing. Does that answer your question?
It does. I mean, basically, it's an issue that exists for a component of your company that deals with data in massive quantities, and you theoretically would have metrics on how accurately those algorithms are finding and processing, what IDNs are doing to that accuracy, things along those lines. And as we try to contribute, I'm not trying to put you on the spot as much as I'm going, wow, that's, you know, if you weren't here, we'd be saying we should talk to Google and see what they could do to help us with this.
So I've never encountered link detection or linkification as a problem in the context of search. I think it's in many cases, when it comes to indexing data, we already have that data structured because it's coming from a URL or it's in a link in the content itself. In books, I think it's probably even less of an issue because books were never written to be able to text that's clicked, although I'm sure there are plain text links in books as well. I think search and like book scanning are probably on the lower end of where this problem shows up for most users.
Thanks. And you may go. So, other comments? Okay, Dennis?
All right. So let's move on. So I think we can tackle this project in two phases, where phase one would be to achieve or set of guidelines to get consistent behavior at the application level. So this means that one application behaves the same or is expected to behave the same across all platform and operators. So as a way of example, if I have Twitter, I would expect that user-generated content on the Twitter application across different platforms, being mobile or desktop, again, mobile or other operating systems, is the same. And when I say this, we're going to look at going back to the building the practices, what are we going to accept or how are we going to define what is going to be an acceptable link? And we have indicators, for example, the www, right? So host names, do we want to do that or not? Protocols, I think that those are the obvious ones. And these are an example of the protocols or the schemes that one might use to signal a string as a URL. So, for example, HTTP, FE, mail to, file, data, etc. And this has a bunch of edits, so because it's meant to be a workshop, so it had red edits to provoke a reaction or question, so whether this is in the right direction or not. So I think Mark and I went and built a draft list of what would be good linkification behaviors. First one is to attempt to linkify based on prefixes. And this could be the www, the schemes names. Only complete the action if the rest of the string is well formed. And I put in red whether there is a RFC that speaks to what is a well formed that needs to be completed. Number two,
the only requirement for a DNS label is that it be under 63 octets.
Octets.
Anything at all can go in there. Just that we have this operational convention that makes the LDH work, which is why we got IDNA. The story here is terrible. You don't want to know all.
So this is Lynette Nardone. We have a comment in the chat room. And basically, it's just a comment stating let's test linkification of this system. And then there are three different systems that are provided. And the second comment from Andre, my brief tests indicate the system does not linkify IDNs.
I'm assuming by this system, meaning the Adobe Connect best. And Don is asking, what about ASCII.ASCII? I will not read every comment aloud. So you know. Action to contact Adobe. Got it. All right.
Okay.
Do one thing we haven't mentioned here in linkification, and I don't think it really matters that much, but you didn't have any port numbers on the end of any of your strings, colon, and then the specific port. And do we consider that in scope or out of scope? Because it implies a lot. That's true. That's true. But well-known ports are well-known, and should they be used? I'm just wondering, does it become part of it or not? And saying it's out of scope is fine. I just want to...
So you're asking, if you have example.com:80, should that automatically be turned into HTTP?
And should 443 automatically default to HTTPS?
And so on. That's a really interesting... So I got to be honest with you. I react to all of this as, what a nightmare. Why did anybody ever think this was a good idea in the first place? And I guess I know why. But the problem is that when you take plain text and you automatically sort of search for things in there and then turn them into links, what you've really assumed, and this is what people generally assume, right, is that links are HTTP and everything's really hypertext, and that's what's really going on here. And I get why people started doing that, but the consequence of that is basically that whenever you've got a string with two dots in it, it automatically gets turned into a link. And maybe that's a good enough rule of thumb for a lot of cases, but I can see how badly it breaks just in these examples, and that's what me itchy about it, because I don't see anything that's going to be really fully satisfying to everybody in every context. There are just too many variables here, right? Because like the ideographic dots, for instance, are useful separators, but that's not this was exactly what Sarmad was saying earlier, right? That's not a character obvious for Arabic script use either, and there's a different one there. But since the dot isn't part of the DNS, yeah, let me put this another way. Because of the way IDNA works, the ideographic separator turns out not to be possible as a character in a U label. But it could be a character in the DNS. In fact, the dot can be a character in the U sucks. And so this is why this is so hard, because it turns out that DNS was intended to be this fully general purpose thing, and we keep making these operational conventions. And every time you invent another one of these conventions, done is bound future development again. So I'm a little nervous about linkification just as a general problem, because most of the cases are going to lead to corners that constrain what you can do in the future in an uncomfortable way. And that's the raw reaction.
Thank you.
I saw a hand going on there.
Oh, please. Yeah, Eric.
My name is Eric Case. I work on an instant domain search engine called Domainer.com. The reason I'm asking about this and why I mentioned that is... a known public suffix list does bulk of the work to tell higher level in the stack software what can be auto-linked and what couldn't be. So it's not just two dots that you just decide to put an HTTP link for it. There's a list of several thousand known public suffixes that browser vendors already use, the Mozilla published, to decide what can be cookied and what can, what shouldn't, and all that stuff. And that's scope to the browser's problem, but I'm just curious if that plays a role in what you're talking about.
You've just tripped over one of my favorite hobby horses. So the public suffix list is, it was a pretty good best I could do this afternoon idea. And I understand why people are using it, and it's because the original cookie specification was broken. So what's happened here, right, is we've got several layers deep now of misunderstandings of the way the DNS works, and we keep adding another one. And so the public suffix list is one of those ones where it gets shipped, and then it runs out of date very quickly, especially right now. And what people are struggling with now is, well, how do you keep that thing up to date, especially since it's maintained you know, by volunteers in their copious free time, and it so it gets wrong all the time. You've got this maintenance problem because who maintain the public suffix list are not the people who are maintaining the list in the DNS. And we actually have a working group at the IETF that is trying desperately to get enough cycles so that we can work on this stuff to be hard.
I don't know if this is relevant, but the way that we solved this for our product was to write a thing that started as data set with the public suffix list and then crawls the root servers recursively to get everything, including the name servers, that just it updates itself with a pull, like sends us a pull request with the updates nightly, and it's always up to date. So I don't know if that's useful. We called it ZoneDB. It's open source. It's on GitHub. But we just that's how we solved it in order to move on for this stuff in our own product.
Mark?
So one of the reasons we had the suggestion there don't require a DNS check, that's similar to the suggestion don't go and look at a public suffix list, because some of this is about working on just a word processor. So the question was, does linkification require an active internet connection? That's really what that is about. So if you assume that everybody is always connected to the internet, even if they're editing a document on their airplane or something like that, do you give up linkification if you're offline? That was one of that's the context of that one there, is don't require a lookup because you might not be connected and people might not want you out on the internet just as I'm writing in WordPad or something like that. We could argue about whether that's the right trade-off or not, but that's where that suggestion came from. And so, again, you could download from the public suffix list at some authoritative source where you could download from time to time, keep it cached away, look it up in your table and stuff like that, and then that solves a couple of the linkification problems. It still doesn't solve all the problems.
Right. It addresses this is really interesting, and there are a few comments I'd like to make. One of them, that addresses the idea that there are known identifiers that are eligible for linkification, and they're the ones that have been codified by the global world. Well, I set up my intranet at home, and I still want all of my internal private domain names to also, because I run my own DNS server, and I'm going to play around, et cetera, and it should be algorithmically based, not data set based, on what is linkifiable and what is not, et cetera. But
is that the definition of this dynamic IRI creation? Should it be what you just said, or should it be some other thing?
Absolutely.
So we started from a particular place similar to you. We didn't capture that context in this slide.
Yeah, I'm with you. Andrew.
So do we expect linkification to work for non-DNS names that still work with HTTP, for instance?
Do we?
No, I have no idea.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure, for instance, that if you put into many word processors www.example.local, which works on but it's using MDNS. It's not using DNS. That will probably get HTTP. But if you just put example.local, it might not. And that's kind of funny because the way you would actually use that is just example, right? That's the UI single label because you never see the .local part. That's the kind of thing that presses against this, particularly as people come up with new and crazy ways of producing alternative domain name compatible name resolution systems. Like the GNU people and the new naming system, and there's the Tor onion stuff that was just created. I mean, now there's a reserved special use TLD for that. Those things are all showing up. And if we want to talk about this question, one question that I would have is, do you want to scope this to the DNS or not? Because if you do, you get one set of answers. If you don't, you get a very different set of answers here, because you're going to have to be able to handle all of the things that are excluded from DNS on purpose.
Just wanted to capture that. Sorry. Brent.
So my opinion on that question is that since we've all formed as a result of new GTLDs and IDNs that are being added to the DNS that we should be scoping our problem to problems created by that new program. So DNS only. And if you have .local and it doesn't get linkified, it's not that big of a deal. Obviously, this still is very context dependent, but I think that the people who need links in that situation are in the minority compared to public DNS users.
I'd like to add one caveat to that. Part of universal acceptance also is just general IRIs like network paths within a corp net, for instance. And in those cases, I think linkification is there's usually a delimiter, you know, like WAC // machine name / the rest of the path. So that's pretty easily linkified, but I think, you know, not related to the DNS, but it is subject to UASG. However, it's a trivial problem. So, you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yes. Well, this is an interesting question. Don and I have talked about this a lot, which is that, and I don't know if we want to digress too much, but I was not under the impression that paths were in scope of what we're trying to cover at all.
Oh, well.
I have similar feelings about it, yeah, too, which is it's like not part of the new domain names that are coming out, and so we don't need to include it in scope.
Yeah,
not sure what the sentiment is of the rest of the group.
I'd like to suggest that it isn't in scope, but it is in context. We need to – anything that we are going to do, if we limit it to the DNS, need, and this was that second point I was going to make earlier that Andrew helped me kind of solidify, and that is the fragility and the – a somewhat ad hocness of what we're trying to improve upon right now when it comes to linkification. And jokingly in my mind, I came up with none of the above or linkification : don't. But none of those actually solve a problem, provide value, and actually get us where we need to go. But we can't just say, wow, look at all the look what we had to deal with in the past. That was really hard and didn't work real well. Wipe the board clean and come up with something fresh. We have to do it. Come up with something fresh, but that at least respects or put in context what we've done before, because that is framing expectations in some circles. It shouldn't hobble us, but we should do it within the context of that. My perspective on your question, Brent.
We have another comment from Andre. In the case of browsers, we need some way of users being able to tell browser that what is in the address bar or is not in the link. A simple button would suffice.
I can add a comment on that. I think that address bars are one of the less ambiguous places to run into this problem. I know Chrome, for example, uses whatever version of the public suffix list was available when it was released to determine whether what you've typed is a query or a domain name. So, and I think Firefox does the same thing. Safari might do something similar. But I don't know.
IE does the same.
Yeah, IE does the same. So, I don't know if this is a big problem with browsers as opposed to everywhere else in free.
I would say that one of the things that linkification really needs is context, and you've got supreme context in that it's an address bar. Just like a password field in a browser has the context of not showing what is being typed, instead replace it with some sort of visual cue as to the number of characters, et cetera. Don.
Yeah, just to counter that it's not a big deal, of the complaints that we've received, that ICANN has received on UA sort of issues, it's I typed my new domain name into the address bar, which is also a search box, and it treated it as a search term and not as an address.
I haven't tested all web browsers, but in the cases that I've come across where that's the case, it's because someone has not updated their web browser in a long time, or it's a non-major browser like an OEM browser on the phone that doesn't have an update available.
Yeah, so in this case, it was a very major player.
I think it's not so much you haven't updated in a long time. There's a certain latency through the pipeline, so the TLD is delegated, then it somehow makes it into the public list through the work of busy volunteers, and then the next version of the browser comes out that is able to consume that list. And so there's a chain of events that has to happen, and if you're delegated one day and you check your browser the next day, the odds of it working on that particular day might be pretty low.
Well, with the PSL, in some cases, something's added to the PSL weeks before In some cases, there
is. Yeah, in some cases, it's going to be fine.
In reverse.
And, yeah.
But, yeah, that's also possible. Actually, Edmund had a question too, but I'm wondering whether that's actually a problem. If there's like 4 days or 2 weeks or whatever it is between when the PSL gets up, between when a domain is delegated and when the PSL gets updated, and then everything starts to work properly for that TLD. Okay.
Okay, Edmund and then Andrew and then George.
No, hey, Edmund here. Oh. So we keep referring to PSL, which is a public suffix list. This morning there was this discussion, and it is one of the topics that I want to talk about. Is this the time to talk about it? Because one of the things is this might need to be part of what we do anyway as well. And there's an ESSAC report that came out. I think it's 70 or 71. That urges Cyana to actually take on the public suffix list rather than, you know, continue to leave it to, as mentioned, volunteers. And Andrew mentioned there's some ITF effort there. Is that something that we need to, you know, work on as well? And how does that relate to linkification? Seems like the more we talk about linkification, that's a critical path in some ways, the PSL, public suffix list, and how we use it, how we treat it, and, you know, 4 days in many cases are not acceptable, but what is in the critical path to make that list, I guess, updated more quickly, and the things that depend on those type of lists updated more reliably and quickly. I think that might be I might be summarizing a little bit what the ESSAC report says, but that's a starting point. I think we need to take into consideration. I don't know how it fits into our work, but that's an item. Just bring it up.
Anything and. Andrew, did you have a comment or?
Oh, well, I do have a comment in that I would really like it if people contributed to this work. So the goal of it's the debound working group domain boundary at the IETF. All join the list right now and instantly you're members of the working group. It's debound at IETF.org. But you have to do work then, right? You got to review documents. The point of that work is to make this. Is to align the maintenance of these problems with the people who are operating the domain names, which has the nice property that then you only have to update one person. But the other thing that I would say is the PSL was updated months ago, actually, to include all of new TLD applications. So the PSL has all of them in it. And what it doesn't have is the bit about whether they've been turned on or not, and different browsers have done different things with that. That's where the thing is now. It's in the browsers. It's not the PSL updating. Is
Andrew, George?
Hi there, George Minardos from .build. Just a real world points on some of this from both a user and a registry perspective. So I've noticed on a couple of the different ISPs. Just personally speaking, originally on Verizon, they would what I would call hijack domain to a search if either it was typed in wrong or if some cases, I'm not quite sure on the history of it. I didn't trace it all the way down to if there was a CNAME associated or not associated. So it would depend how you type the name into the browser. In any event, it didn't resolve, and then it turned your query, which should have been very easily identified as a domain name, into a search. And that was just personal experience I noticed. I'll find out a little bit more on the root of if it resolves whether you type in www or not, and whether that was a ISP side or if it was something how the name was, the domain records. But I just wanted to point that out as a kind of example of where we're seeing it a little bit.
Hey, George. Dennis, we kind of hijacked your deck.
No, that was the purpose of this workshop, right? It's to spark conversation and maybe challenge whether this is a good project to put our efforts in. So, Seth.
So, Dennis, what was the conclusion to that last? Is it in scope of the UASG?
I was going to recommend as an action that we formally define the scope within the context within a reasonably short period of time, but I had never even considered other verticals like ISPs, as George just mentioned, where linkification comes into play. It's more than just a user experience or design characteristic. It's actually going to could affect the functioning of the resolution if intermediary providers start doing linkation based on the strengths that they're seeing. I don't, you know, depends on what it is. Go ahead.
So my knee jerk is that the problem here is likely what happens is you get a failure on the DNS lookup, and then somebody start doing something magical along the way, and that is a separate problem from this, like really dramatically separate, because it's at a different part of the stack. But what happens, of course, is that from the user's point of view, it all looks like the same thing, and so this might be a separate problem that this group needs to talk a little bit about. ESSAC has already issued advice that is, please stop that. But I know that one of the largest ISPs in the U.S. that large installed base of fiber continues to do this, for instance. So it's a persistent problem that we see regularly, and it's extraordinarily confusing if you can't even figure out which part of your application all the way down to your ISP is doing it for you.
Dennis?
All right. So,
Don.
Yes, just one last comment. You'll remember the APNIC Labs report that came out a couple of months ago, and Jeff is gone. But one of his questions was, when he looked at the data, why were there these little anomalies as to things didn't work as they should? Not about the IDNs, but just generally. And sometimes they were more prevalent in some communities than other communities. So I think we keep it in scope, that's fine. But I think there's bits that have not a lot to do with the software developers, and we need to make sure that we're working with whoever the right folk are in terms of whether it's ISPs or hosting companies or whatever. Yeah, does that make sense? So whereas an application specific thing, yep, that's fine. There are other places where things could go differently than you might expect. And let's work with them as well.
Yeah, so I think what we're doing now is we're taking the action item to review what the scope is going to be and put it forward to comments. So going back to the...
To interrupt, that's mm-hmm. what? We need a who and a when? I've been doing that all day for those.
What is... Right, is define the scope, I think. Who? You can put my name on it, along with Mark.
Anybody from outside the UASG interested in this topic? It has been one of the more lively discussions, so I'm assuming there's a complete vertical of interest in this, all the way down to protocol level, all the way through to applications, ISPs, etc. Just one more person. Pardon? I kind of was looking at him most of that time, and while he...
Trying really hard not to add more stuff, but okay.
We'll do it in a way that makes it fun.
It's actually the response time. My mean response time has been going up for months now, so I'm just worried that you might not get your answer. Yes, I will do this.
We'll treat the NX domain issue with this as well. When you don't respond, we'll go ahead and anyway. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. And the when, I'm going to allow Dennis to think about that through, and I'll just put it in at the end of the session today. Thank you.
All right. So going back to the presentation, we really don't need to go through every single detail because it was meant to be items just to start a conversation, and we might as well revise everything here depending on the scope we're going to come up with later. So moving on, again, we're going to define this when we scope it out, what linkification is going to be about. And that's it for me.
Here, sorry. Again, trying to take notes. For one of the things that we're about to do in a moment is transition back towards a bit of a recap day and then also talk a little bit about tomorrow. I believe, is that right, Don? Okay. And what I've been doing throughout the day is a capture for each of the different sessions we've gone through a what, who, and when for action items, so that when we're done with this session today, we don't wonder what we're going to do about it, but that we've actually, throughout the day, have identified things that we felt were important in the moment, individuals that were willing to put their name next to it, and a time at which we know we'll get together. And when we get together next time, whether it's in Marrakesh or whatever that venue is, we are going to see some level of velocity, success, and failure. Some accountability is something that I think it helps most working groups. So if we're done with linkification, from my standpoint, we could start walking through. I ended up with 17 action items for us. Yeah, Christian, I know you're excited about that. I don't think... Pardon? Yeah, exactly. We have a tool that we can start using now. So what I'd like... Go ahead, Don. If you have a thought about how you want this to run, I have been scribing, so...
Yep. I'm just wondering if we can just use your... Turn your thingy into a thingy so that... I used to be technical a long time ago, but so that everybody can see what you're seeing.
I'm thinking because that? I did write them as internal notes, and I just want to make sure that in the moment I did write quick sometimes. So give me one moment, okay? I thought about that before and thought maybe it wasn't such a hot idea. But linkifying my comment here, okay? A typo already. It was a face, instead of face-to-face, it was face-three-face. I guess it was three people together talking. Anyway, so let's see. How do I do this? Hello. I just have not done it before. Oh. Got to make sure email's closed. Quitted. Yeah, it's not, though. That's the problem.
Oh, go ahead.
What I told you I wasn't going to do, remember? Well, but I want to know which window I want to hit first. One, thank you, 17 actions. Brent, you're part of the first one. It dealt with local part transformations for EAI addresses, coming up with a recommendation for its implementation, if you remember that. We have that as a Q2 for the 2016 face-to-face gathering. So that would be, is that going to be in Marrakesh then or Washington? So that's actually in January. That's Q1. Brent. Leading it. Anyone that is listed here is encouraged to engage with anyone that you think might be helpful and has time to help. Okay. The second item I had on the list was also Brent and Mark, and it dealt with the CIO guide, system architecture guide. And we again had a middle of January or January 14th readiness for that.
Talk to probably you and Mark and Don about what exactly that is, but I don't think it needs to be done.
Yes.
Audience.
Yeah, this is just my action list. I do have more notes on the other side, and I think what we had talked about doing is stratifying it into we need something very short for CIOs to grab their interest, something a little meatier for CIOs that would actually give them something that they could digest, and then also a more detailed segment of that document gets pulled out and into things specific to implementers and architects. Is that about right, Mark? Third item on the list that I have down as Christian, which is the creating the forum environment. And I think we need to decide. We talked a little bit beyond that and started talking about using Stack Exchange or some other existing forum. And my thought on that was that we don't necessarily want to create a new destination where we want to try to draw people, but that we probably want to insert ourselves into a destination where the people that we're trying to go or speak to are already going. And that's why I like having an area in Stack Exchange. So that's Christian. And again, that is by the 14th. We would have a recommendation on it. It's just a creation, identification and creation of a forum. Fourth item was to come up with a model for local outreach. And on that, we had Don, Tony, and a name that I didn't type well. Pensary, thank you very much. I apologize. And we had November 30th for that one. The item was to address a Talking Points memo project. And that was Christian, Emily, and Yuri. And I believe Emily suggested that she would like it to take as long as January 14th instead of doing it within 30 days, just given the scope of what it really can be. We were also, I refer to it as the Talking Points Memo Project because it can also include the identification of additional research that needs to be done. And so it's more than just, hey, Brent, here are these six things we're going to talk about. It's formal set of talking points that can be meaningful in the long term. Okay? Edmund.
Edmund here. Just put, I guess, a point of order. Do we discuss each, if I wanted to suggest yes. Right now, or are you going to go through the list first and come back?
I would like to do them as we go through the list. Okay. So we do it once. If that's
so,
okay.
Sorry for jumping back to the the fourth item. I think it was the local.
Local outreach, yes.
Local outreach. So I did the presentation at ALAC, and ALAC has an outreach function itself. In fact, they suggested that we connect with their outreach function and use a similar channel to outreach. And I guess adding to the three person, we should add a person from ALAC. I think I can try to find out who is the right person. And add to that group. The other one is a brief conversation with Valerie from ICANN. ICANN hubs are also, I think, good ones to add to that work. So I'm kind of volunteering Valerie also into the. Gwen may have a better idea.
Yeah, I'm full of good ideas. No, not really. Actually, I think using the hubs, but also using our global stakeholder engagement team, they're based worldwide. And typically what we do on issues such as name collision, we actually push out packages with slides, messaging, so forth. We ask them to include it when they're meeting with businesses, governments, and so forth. So we can do that. And then the hub regional newsletters, we can also include a little piece of information in each of those.
So Edmund, so does that mean we add you, Gwen? Well, Valerie, we're adding, right? You're okay to that little group to kind of scope it out, right?
I'd like to suggest that we not continue to expand the who the too far because we lose accountability, but that you would include those individuals as part of. I've added you, so put it that way.
And what I suggest,
that'll teach you.
What no, I suggest we do is Valerie and I can work together so we have a coordinated push so it's not just out of the APAC hub. So comms can take a lead on it, and then we'll work with Valerie and representatives in each of our hubs.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's not so much. No, it was Edmund. I only put your name because you're at ALAC comment, and so that you could figure out who that should be. I don't just do that too much. All right, we had a very relatively straightforward item for Christian, Gwen, Mark, and Don, and that was to create a universal acceptance DNA Google Doodle. So set up a meeting to take place for within the next 30 days. Talk about the universal acceptance and the DNA collaboration points. Is that accurate, Don? All right. Elaine, Lars, and a comma with no name after it. Create a method for sharing industry contact databases. Basically, we have to understand, I don't remember the exact session this was, but when we think about identifying issues on the internet and vendors that need to be contacted or system owners, having a shared set of information could be very useful in making those communications very effective. We just need to be careful about someone sharing information that they've gotten on that should be kept private and giving it more broadly across the internet. But at the same time, if Lars, for example, has contacted Apple regarding a problem and he knows they're working on it and they don't need more pressure, we might not want to contact them again right away. Or he might say, please pile on, I've been trying for forever. And that kind of coordinated outreach tool was going to be done.
Yeah, so that's part of the measurement and monitoring, I would think, and I'd put Mark's name there as well.
Done. And again, this was creating a paradigm and method for it, and that was by the January meeting. Eighth item, Christian and Brent were going to establish a relationship, include membership with MOG. And again, that was going to be done within 2 weeks of this date, by the end of the month. Ninth item, establish a relationship with ISOC, and that could include membership, as my note says, right? I didn't think so. Don, copied and pasted. Got it. Anyway, Don was going to handle that one, and he was going to do so by the end of October. And then there was a comment I added said to look into leveraging IPv6 materials that they made. Don.
Yeah, so we also talked a couple of times about engaging with ISOC in terms of community outreach, in terms of using what they've learned in IPv6, learned in DNSSEC to engage with Dan York, but also they produced a State of the Internet report last year, middle of last year. I call it the Blue Book because it had a blue cover, and it was really good. It had lots of stories, lots of pictures, and that's the sort of thing that we talked about doing, is lots of stories about how people are using, shifting to being UA ready and why they're doing it. So that's sort of in broad encompassing things.
Great. It sounds like this is a little gem that came out of this meeting. Leveraging relationship could be really good. Next item was the EA, Brent and Edmund putting together an EAI report to the coordination group in January. Basically, instead of coming up with dates for your timelines, it was what is the progress on your communication, and you're putting forward the EAI, the amorphous timeline, as I referred to it, if you remember now. Okay. The 11th item is a UA-ready preliminary draft of guidelines for comment by Dennis by the 14th of January, followed by a one-month public commentary summary by the February 14th, and then a month later, a final UA-ready guide that needs to be completed. I did not have a who for the UA-ready commentary or the guide itself at this point. I'm not sure that Dennis is not the right guy. I think he is the right guy. Dennis and Rick, I'll put myself down as well because I was alongside him on that one.
Yep, and I would say use aim for the first draft for Washington and aim for the second draft for Marrakesh, and try to have a gathering of some period of time in a room not unlike this to just focus that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay, and I've got Dennis and Rich down for that second iteration in Marrakesh for owning that. 14th item, create a generic document for registries and registrar readiness scorecard. That's something that, Don, you were going to talk to ICANN about.
I was going to ask ICANN to do that for themselves, and possibly as they do that, the registry registrar little working group that you've got already could use that as a template,
right,
or work that's with them.
Said differently, that's what I was intending. I don't have a when down for that for you, when you were going to speak to them about it.
I'll do it.
Understood. Thank you. 15th item, define what cross-section and size of working group should be for the registrar team. That's the idea was, again, that the registries and registrars are not fully represented in this room, and that there are other registrars and registries that should care about UA, and they have systems that will need to be made ready as well, not just from the GTLD or North American perspective, but from a global perspective and across all the different types of ELDs. So we'll want to define what that working group could look like and come back by the end of the month with a recommendation to the University Coordination Group on who that should be, who we should be calling out for membership of that.
So I got the sense is you guys were going to use meetings and hallways this week to pull on the shoulder.
We could tap them on the shoulder if we knew who we wanted to and why. What I'd like to understand is the...
So you want some diversity.
What is the appropriate position for the group? And then we'll...
Tap them.
Tap the...
Okay.
That I don't want it to be a catch-as-catch-can because we may end up with a distorted view. My recommendation, anyway. And then we do meet, and it just so happens that we work with registries all the time pretty broadly. We can be opportunistic about communicating with them immediately after. We don't have to wait until we see them in hallways down the road. 15, define a cross-section. Oh, that was it, wasn't it? Then 16, because I deleted one. We really only have 16. Review scope and put forward a recommendation. And this is the one where I got lost. This was right at the end, so I apologize. I didn't. For linkification. And I had Dennis, Mark, and ample time from Andrew on that one.
Copious.
Copious, yes. Anyway. And I did not have a when down for that. I think, were we going to come back later? Oh, that would be now. Now was when we were going to come back for the later, for the when, and he's running away. Yeah. Yeah. You can get back to me on that, okay? Yeah. It's been a long day, and I'd rather leave it blank and know we have to come back to it than put something down that's artificial and be wrong.
Yeah.
So those are the 16 action items that I had. If there are others that people had takeaways, please share them with me now or stop by Rich at GoDaddy.com. You've hold of me. Look, catch me up. Is there a link to that? No. I'm giving you my EAI so that it won't. Yes. Okay. The geekiness is getting thick even for me now. Don, I'm going to hand it back to you for summary and closure as you may want to, which could include you saying goodbye or more. It's up to you.
Thanks very much. First of all, thanks to Rich and Christian for chairing and keeping things running and very active, and for people's active participation, and for those who are left standing, so that's really impressive that you made it through the day. So thank you very much. I think we got good stuff done. We had some interesting conversations, some geeky conversations, some not so geeky conversations. And Rich, thanks very much for taking the notes as to what we committed to do and when we're committed to do it. So that's really good. We have a session tomorrow, the open forum. Edmund's going to drive that. One of the things we want to do is we'll, if you can remember back to this morning, there was a presentation that Christian did on what's happening with the UASG. He went through, so that we issued a report the other day about a written report. An update is what's happening with UASG, and Christian went through that in slides, and Edmund and I will talk about that. And get him to do something similar, and we'll probably take the budget slide out because that's really not terribly interesting, I think, for people not involved. And other than that, there is a budget, and we have that already. And we'll add a final slide indicating that this meeting gathered, and we had 17 items, and we'll highlight some of them. 17 items. You heard from Ashman that he can't, they can't count. That's right. We'll add some. We'll break a couple of them down, whatever. So if you could email me that list, then we can create. And Edmund, if it's all right, we won't include all 17, but we'll just give some representative samples.
Why not include all 17?
Because we won't have time.
No. I won't go through all of them. You can.
Oh, you just want to list
just
them.
Just list all of them out so that people can.
All right, we'll put it in three points.
You can highlight which ones that you That's, want me to highlight.
Yep. Okay.
So I will send that to you. Don't worry.
Thanks.
And I'll copy Edmund just in case there's an issue.
So tomorrow we have. Tomorrow's program is an introduction from Edmund, just reminding people why we're here, talking about what we've done since Buenos Aires, talking about what we've done here. Then we have Rinalia Abdul-Rahim, who's a board member, and she's a board member from ALAC. That matters, but I don't think it does. And she's going to give a similar inspirational short talk, similar to what Avery did this morning, as to why this matters. And then we have a panel, this panel discussion, which is very much along what Dennis and Rich did, sort of on looking at a specific industry, which is our industry, the registry, registrars, posters, and we'll have a couple of registries represented. We'll have a couple of registrars represented. Jeff Houston will be from the RIRs, and that's relevant because he's actually done that experiment and see some of that stuff happening. And Ashwin will also be on the panel. He won't be there. Won't be slides for it. He'll probably. I think you'll be challenged to get him to not. But he'll talk through what happened. So the schedule currently has only 20 minutes available for that panel. So if we can compress the things leading up to it, I think that will be better. And then when you get bored, Edmund, or not, I mean, there's a 15-minute Q&A session, and it could be that things I would expand on will be interesting enough that you'll probably run out of time. But don't fret, if that would be my suggestion. And if there's no time for Q&A, then there's, then that's okay. My view is I'm okay with that because I think the panel will be interesting. And that's tomorrow. And then there's a session at the GAC on Tuesday that Christian and Edmund are going to drive. And there's we did the ALAC today, and I think that's all that we have specifically scheduled.
Yeah, we do have a thank you to the board for their support.
That's correct.
Et cetera.
That's right. That's a public forum, and Rich is going to draft that and circulate that, and then he'll deliver that on Thursday.
Yeah, Christian. He's not here, but Christian did most of that already. Credit. I'll work with him and make sure we get it routed, delivering because he's out of town.
So I just sort of like to go around, make sure that there were topics that you wanted to get, you expected to get covered, or you had hoped would come out that didn't get covered, that you have that opportunity now, rather than call names, because I don't know everybody's names, but I'll just...
Nothing. He's glaring.
Desk is clean. Yep. Lars? I am so excited that you're involved, because you have good ideas, good work, and you've got all those contacts within ECO, so that's marvelous.
And you tweet.
Edmund? Everybody's avoiding eye contact. George? We didn't talk about your project. It's on the list that we were going to talk with Don and Elaine, I think, were the participants, and I'm happy to add you if you want. But at the moment, it's just looking at the work. And Lars, were you on that? Rich will tell us who's on the list. But George in L.A. offered to develop a little system, database, I'm not sure what they're called, app, is that what they're called now? But where we could record who we engage with, and where other people engage, they could register it as well. So I think it's on the table. From my perspective, it's still on the offer is still on the table, whether you've agreed to it or not. But
I'll participate in anything.
Sensory, you're looking tired.
I do now, yes. The place that I felt that landed was the UADNA discussion. Because the DNA donut, there's a lot of this, it's an intersection of activity regarding awareness and universal awareness as well as universal acceptance. And I thought it was in the intersection of that where this topic landed. Yeah, misremembering. I'm going to have to go to my more detailed notes.
That might be action item 18.
That's number 17.
Mark, you were quiet today. So thank you all very much. I feel really positive about UASG now, and that's changed for me from the past month. Thanks very much for... Yeah.
Anybody that knows Don knows what that just meant. So, yeah, thank you very much for all your work, Don. And everyone that did not only showed up but stayed. It was fantastic. Thank you.